Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
McKenna Nwato is a African black PH professional hunter in South Africa. There's not many of McKenna. I know of probably only a handful that are true blue black professional hunters in South Africa. And so I wanted to have a conversation with McKenna talking about why he decided to become a professional hunter, how did he get involved in wildlife conservation, what was his upbringing as it relates to wildlife, and what are the next steps from engaging more black South Africans into the professional hunting realm. As you'll hear, McKenna is a very soft-spoken individual, very thoughtful individual. And I really enjoy my time when I get to spend it with McKenna, because he's just got this beaming smile on his face constantly.
So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple. Is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it? Brittany.
My name.
Does my hair look okay? It's
fantastic. My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a non-profit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
They're going to go river rafting down here.
Yeah, white river rafting.
What do you mean white river rafting? This isn't like, what kind
no
of...
It's no waste, no...
Tiny little rapids. Yeah. Not big rapids that they're going to turn the boats over. Or maybe there's bigger rapids downstream, maybe.
I don't know.
This isn't home for you?
No.
Where's home for you?
It's Pretoria. Actually, I'm from Northwest Brits.
Northwest Pretoria.
Northwest in Brits.
Oh, Brits. Brits is home. The town Brits.
Yes.
It's still called Brits today?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Cool. And I'm in Pretoria. My house is in Pretoria.
Born and raised in Pretoria or born and raised in Brits?
In Brits. And then when I started working, I went to Pretoria.
Huh.
Uh-huh. Because I needed to get closer to work.
So, give me a background of, before we get going.
Okay.
McKenna, welcome to the Blood Origins podcast.
Thank you.
I don't want to presume how to say your last name. McKenna who?
Nwato.
Nwato.
There you go, yeah.
And introduce yourself. What do you do? Who are you?
All right. My name is McKenna. My name is Nwato. I'm a professional hunter. Started hunting...
But McKenna, you're black. You're not supposed to be a professional hunter.
Yeah, well, people say that. I get that a lot. Yeah, but what? It's passion. And you'd be surprised. I was introduced to rifle hunting by an Indian guy.
Really?
Yeah. He was my boss. And how it happened is, you know, we would have seminars and conferences. So as part of Icebreakers, he used to show us his hunting pictures, his outdoor pictures. He's like an outdoor guy. Mm. So then I started liking them, and I said to him, I need to do what you're doing. I said, okay, I'll help you.
What do you mean you wanted to, like, what were you doing?
Okay, my story is very weird. I'm a qualified actor. So
you're a qualified actor?
Yes.
What do you mean?
From university, actually from high school, I went to university. I studied drama and film studies, and I graduated, did a little bit of TV work.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, with TV, you're always freelancing.
Right.
So what I did is I went into tourism as a performer. It was a cultural village, so there's dance performance and all that. But I ended up guiding people.
But what did you want to do as a job? Act.
Act. Be on TV.
Be on TV.
That was my ultimate goal.
Okay.
But then I got picked by South African Breweries while I was still working at the cultural village doing freelance acting. And that's when actually I made my big breakthrough in acting. I just got a role in a soapy called Muvango, and I was there. And then SAB came, they liked me. I did a presentation on Sorghum Beer, but okay, as part of the tour at the cultural village.
Okay.
So they liked
me. So what did South African Breweries do for you?
Okay. They said to me they like my personality.
Uh-huh.
So for that, they think I'm the right person to handle their customer complaints. But now I
gosh, could you imagine? What a job.
Yeah. And then
you are perfect for dealing with everyone that complains about us.
Yeah, that's what they said, actually. They said, no, we like the attitude, so don't worry about the science. Because now I'm coming from BA. I've got a Bachelor of Arts.
Mm.
Now they're putting me to work with people with BSc in engineering and also in science and what that. So they put me on a 1-year, 6-month training course where now they had to teach me about the procedures and processes that are involved in making beer, the off flavors, how do they come.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then because they had their own training institution, throughout all they did was, you know, wherever they saw I lacked, they sent me to the institution every now and then. So yeah, that's how I ended up doing it. And I ended up handling legal complaints, media threats, doing trade recalls.
Oh, okay. So you weren't dealing with
old
Yanni down the road who hated the taste of Lion Lager.
Those are the guys. I mean, remember, a trade recall is triggered by a complaint.
Okay.
It starts as a complaint, so you get the product back to the plant, you trace where the system could have gone wrong, and sometimes you find that it's a batch problem.
Mm.
So then you initiate a trade recall, but starting from a single client complaining, you recall the whole product back because there was a default or a system failure somewhere.
Okay. So when you were growing up, when you were growing up in Brits, did you grow up in the city? Did you grow up in the country?
It was in a village, very, very rural. It still is today. I mean, we grew up without electricity up until the late 90s.
Okay. Obviously, no water, no sewage.
No water. To the present day, there's no water. They're still getting water delivered by water tanks. It's difficult to even get water from underground. I mean, I also tried to get a borehole for my mom, but it didn't work.
Oh, really?
Because the water is way, way beyond 100 meters.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, it's difficult. But now we grew up hunting because we it's a remote village.
Mm.
So I was even teasing my younger brother yesterday because he used to trap birds. Like, you know, we would have chickens and goats and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then where there's a feeding area where we feed them, you know, birds would always come and salvage.
Okay.
So that's where he trapped them. Yesterday I was teasing him. There's a picture.
How old is your brother?
Now he's 40. He was born in 81.
And he's still in the village?
No, he's now in Harankuwa. Okay. A township.
So who was trapping birds yesterday?
Yesterday I was teasing him with a picture I found on...
Oh, from when you guys were younger.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, but...
So you hunted when you were a kid?
Yeah, not to just that extent. Birds. Yes, just small things. Birds. I mean, we would go out and try to trap rabbits and guinea fowls. I wasn't that lucky. Honestly, as a kid, I wasn't a good hunter.
So tell me, when you were doing this as a kid, why were you doing it?
Mainly it was for food.
Mainly for food.
It was actually purely for food, because depending on how many birds you kill, you would take home. My mom to the present day, I go out for bird hunting. She loves bird. Go home. If you trap, like when we trap them, we caught more than 30 in a day.
Mm.
So you take that 30, pluck the feathers off, skin them, clean them, then would give them to the mom.
Mm.
Then mom would prepare them, and then obviously it's pop and birds.
Mm, pop, meat, and gravy.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. So like when my...
Is today... let me ask this question. We've now... How old are you now, McKenna?
I'm 45 this year.
Okay, same as me.
Okay,
cool. Are there kids today in that village that you grew up with still doing the same thing?
Yeah.
They're still trapping for food.
They are. But now what is also happening is we've got people coming from other places who have rifles. So sometimes these boys would call them in, and they would come and shoot. I know there's two or three of them that are doing it mostly. Now they're even starting to sell the meat to the locals. So, but they come in, they hunt, and...
So they're hunting, let me ask this, that land that they're hunting on, is the community's land, is the village's land, is the chief's land? What is it?
It's a communal land. It's a chief's land where it was purchased. You know, we've got different types. This one is a type that a group of people, I think they were 28, many years ago, they put money together, they bought it from the government, and then now we have a headman.
Mm.
But the headman accounts to the chief.
Okay.
So every 5 years, we elect a new headman.
Yeah.
In a way, we are kind of...
It's like the mayor.
Yes. We in a way, a little bit private from the chief, because it's more like a private farm.
Gotcha.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to get to here is, so now you've got people with guns. They're obviously a little bit more powerful to kill something bigger, like a deka or...
A kudu.
Kudu or something like that. Does the chief say to them, you can do it?
I do it. So what happens is...
What do you mean you do it?
Are
you in charge of that?
Yes, I sat with the tribal authority. I think I'm the first guy, if not the only guy, from my village, the specific village where we grew up from, that owns a hunting rifle.
Okay.
So when I applied for my very first rifle, I sat with the community and I requested them to write me, you know, when you do the application, they want to know where you're going to hunt.
What are you doing? Why are you doing it? Yeah.
Yes. So I went there, I asked them to write me a letter. They did write me a letter that I will be hunting in the village. So, and then I sat with the tribal authority. They gave me powers to apply for permits on their behalf.
Animal permits.
Hunting permits from the department.
But why do they have to apply for hunting permits if the land is theirs?
But the animals are not theirs.
No, the system in South Africa says that it is theirs.
Is it?
So, for instance, let me say this. Yeah. Let me couch it a different way. Yeah. Who do we know here?
Constant.
Howard Knott.
Okay.
Howard Knott owns a property.
Yes.
It's his property.
Yes.
The wildlife on that property
is his. Yes.
So he can decide, I'm killing 500 kudu this year or I'm killing 5 kudu this year.
Yes.
The same thing should be if that land is yours. But is it yours then, or is it state-owned?
It's ours, but it doesn't have fences. So now there's 1, 2, 3, 4 villages surrounding us.
Okay.
So these animals, they can be anywhere.
That's why you need to do the permit process.
Yes. Okay. Because now We don't want, as well, we don't want someone from a different village hunting on our land without mm-hmm. permit.
Mm-hmm.
So we, I mean, they don't cost a lot. I think a kudu, the government, to get a permit for a kudu, they ask for 150, 170 rand.
Okay.
So that actually helps us with controlling, to see who's poaching and who's not. Because the person...
So does the... go ahead, keep going.
Okay. Yeah, the person that comes there without a permit, that, you know, they obtained from our chief, then he's illegally hunting on our land.
How does the community feel about poaching?
Different. We have different views. It depends. The older people, they are very concerned and they're protective. And I also didn't understand why they were protective in the beginning until I got into the industry. Then I understand. The young people, they just want meat. If somebody's there to hunt illegally, they will take the meat from him. But mostly not because out of jealousy or out of protecting the animals. They know that the person is there illegally, but because he has the meat from the community, they will take the meat. I don't know if you understand.
Yeah, but they want the meat.
They want that meat.
And you understand it because they're looking to... They're just looking for food.
They're looking for food. I want to tell you this story. It's a little bit sweet and short. You know, I have four other brothers, so we're five boys in my family. So my second eldest brother, he was an avid hunter. He hunted, he trapped, he did everything. So he went into the army. But before he could go join the army, that week he dedicated it to hunting. Just so that he leaves enough meat for us.
Yeah.
Then he knew he was going to stay there for 6 months or so without coming back.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
So then he just hunted, and then obviously back then we didn't even have a refrigerator, so we had to hang the meat.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but that's how we do it.
So McKenna, in your mind, do you think there's a difference? Because again, what I'm trying to get here, I'm trying to just figure out the dynamics, right?
All
right. So this community, they're protective of the animals, so they don't like poaching because they're protective of the animals from a food perspective.
Yes.
But what if they knew that and they're okay with somebody hunting for food?
Yes.
Even if they may not have a permit?
Actually they not, but they will not.
How is the community's response for someone who's coming in illegally without a permit? They're actually not doing it for the food. They want to sell the meat, and they want to make money from it.
Look, okay, from experience, there hasn't been anyone that was confronted by the community, except for a group that was confronted by me personally. But the community, they will complain, but I think maybe it's also out of fear, because those people have guns, and they don't have guns. Maybe it's out of fear, but they have never confronted a person, and honestly I don't know the motivation.
What is McKenna's opinion?
All right.
I want to know McKenna's opinion on, because you were there, the idea of hunting / poaching without a permit for food for the family because they're hungry.
Yes.
Versus poaching without a permit where we're not feeding my family, I'm taking it outside and I'm selling the meat so I can make money.
That is a problem. I think I didn't. Now that you rephrased it, my opinion and the community's opinion, I've seen it with herbs.
Herbs?
Herbs, yeah. When people like traditional healers would come.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they'd come and dig out some medicinal plants and all that. They will definitely confront that person and tell them to stop.
Because they don't have a permit.
They don't have a permit. And
it's not their land.
It's not their land. Even with firewood.
Mm.
If you don't belong in our village and you come and collect firewood on our land, they will definitely confront you. What they haven't done is with animals because... And I also think it's out of fear of the fact that the people have guns.
Mm.
But when we're sitting around the table, maybe at a party or somewhere, you'd hear them mentioning these things that, you know, there's somebody stealing our animals here and there. There's guys who are shooting. but they would just relay the message. But I think yeah, no. I think now that you rephrased it, I know that the guys will be protective. Like what happened just last year, somebody came and started collecting sand from the river, you know, the river sand for building. They didn't even let them stay there for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
He just came in with his equipment. Then people gathered, and then they started talking about it, regrouping, and then in 5-6 days, they confronted
him, and
they chased him off. So that's, I think, yeah, they protect the natural resources. They know the value, even if they're not using it, but they're jealous of someone coming to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no, that's, yeah, no, now I got to understand clearly now.
McKenna, so you work for SAB, mm-hmm. and was it there that you met this Indian guy?
Yes, I met him there. He was my boss.
Okay.
My direct boss. Now he's my biggest client. Every year he makes sure that he hunts with me once or twice. So, yeah, he took me through the process.
So, but were you interested in hunting? You didn't know, did you know much about it at that point? Or was it just almost just like, ah?
Actually, I didn't know about hunting.
Mm.
I didn't know about rifle hunting. I didn't know about the way that I'm doing it now, that I was clueless.
Did you have an opinion about hunting?
Back then, hunting was for food.
Mm.
Whatever you could eat, then and you needed it, you would take.
And you didn't really have it. Did you know about the idea of clients and money and animals and stuff?
No, I didn't. I didn't. What I
do you think that's the vast majority of, say, your village? If we had to go to your village today and poll them about their thoughts around hunting, you know, white Americans or whatever coming to Africa and hunting animals, do you think they'd be the same as you? They don't really know, they don't really care, or they just don't know?
They just don't know. They just don't know. And I've realized it as well amongst dedicated hunters, dedicated black hunters who have rifles. And when I tell them I'm a professional hunter, and they ask me, how do you make money from this? And I sit with them and I explain. Then they start developing the interest. Like this year.
No, they have no idea that a kudu could be...
It could be sold.
18,000
yes.
rand.
Yes. No, they
not
don't.
Not 150 rand.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Which is why as well it's becoming... I think we're getting more people that now, after being exposed, then they want to do professional hunting.
Why do they want it?
Because they realize the financial benefit of the exercise.
Mm.
Just like with me as well, I didn't know until I went on different farms and I started hunting on other people's properties, and people started now saying, hey, we want to join you. And then some people say, shoot for me. And somebody say, now you're shooting for these people for free.
Mm.
You should actually charge them for something.
Mm.
Then I started doing that. And I got actually tricked by one farmer. And I was running around looking for...
But you're just doing this for what now at this point?
It was for fun. You know, I would... When I was,
you've got your rifle now. You've got your license. The community said yes, and now you're just hunting for fun. You're still working for SAB.
No. Not that time. Not in my community. I was now hunting on private lands.
But still working for SAB.
Still working for SAB.
But you had access to private lands, and
yes. So I then went to hunt on one farm where the farmer gave me a prize before I came. After shooting the animals, the price went up.
Oh.
So then I...
And why did the price go up? Because you shot a too big animal?
Nah, I think he just...
Yeah,
because it was packaged.
Okay.
He sold packages, but after I shot, then he broke the packages down to individual animals. Taking advantage of my lack of knowledge, then I started now searching for knowledge now, and started posting on Facebook. People were like, hey, we want to join you. Then I realized that these people who want to join me actually can be my clients.
And these clients, were these people that wanted to join you, are these white South Africans, black South Africans?
Black South Africans.
Really?
Yeah, who also were seeing it for the first time.
Right.
With me doing it.
Right.
Now they have the money, they have good jobs.
And then all of a sudden, wow, this is something I want to do.
Yes, yes. And then they train me, they buy rifles. Now they want to buy more rifles, they become dedicated. Now they hear me, I was hunting with an American client. I shot a buffalo, I shot a rhino. And like, yeah, no, I think this. And then how much do you sell this? How do you do your profit? No, I add my markup here. Like, this is how I do my calculation. No, I think I want to do this.
Wow.
Like, we have a gentleman.
Are you seeing more and more black South Africans becoming more and more interested in hunting?
Yeah, no, there's a lot.
Huh.
Our WhatsApp group that I started about 3 years back with my very first clients.
How many people in that WhatsApp group
we
now?
We have about 100 I think it's 104.
You're posting all the Blood Origins videos into that WhatsApp group, right?
Not yet. I will.
Good answer. Not yet. Not good yet. Answer. Yeah. I need to get your. I'll get your WhatsApp number, and then I'll just send you. I'll send you the. I'll send you the videos that we create all the time. Okay.
All right, that's good. Let me just give you the exact number. 101.
Nice.
Yes, and then we just sent the first guy on PH training. He completed it 2 weeks back. Next year we have two guys that now want to become professional hunters.
Wow.
So we will be having, well, two is guaranteed for next
what
year.
What was that acronym that I just saw? AA?
It's ACHCOF, which is Association of African Conservationist Hunters, Gun Owners and Fishermen.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
Awesome.
Because the reason we're doing it this way, we have, actually what I have realized is that we have a gap that we need to address in the market, especially with lack of knowledge from our communities, especially about private land.
Mm.
What I have seen escalating this year is the conflict between landowners and dog hunters, whereby now it becomes, it gets to a point where somebody gets killed in the process.
Oh, wow.
Like it happened in Mpumalanga, a guy got shot while they were hunting on someone's property.
Without permission.
Without permission, yes. And now what I did, instead of brushing off dog hunters and saying, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
I realized that like me, they don't know. I didn't know
until
I got introduced into the industry. So now I'm pulling in these dog hunters. There's a lady in KwaZulu-Natal who hunts with dogs. And she's very good. She's been interviewed, I don't know how many times, podcasts, SAB radio. Everybody's impressed.
But black woman?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's very young. She's 23 years old.
Really?
She's still a university student.
Jeez. I need to get to know her.
Yeah, no, you will. I've got her here.
Okay.
So what I did is I got her into the group, and I realized that if I can get this girl a hunting rifle, then we can now, all her followers might be converted.
Mm.
So instead of now, you know, cutting these people, they will mushroom somewhere else.
Sure, sure.
So rather than convert them instead of just chasing them away. So she's a good friend. I haven't met her face to face.
Yeah, yeah.
But we speak almost daily on Facebook, on WhatsApp. Mm. We even phone each other because I promised her that I'm going to help her get her competency certificate. And I hope to get a sponsor for her to get a first hunting rifle.
Mm.
When we're done with the podcast, I will show you her Facebook page. She goes out. She's the only girl. She's very young, 23. She goes out with like 15 guys into the bush with dogs. And she's there. She's enjoying it. She's loving it.
Mm.
So all I want is just now to get her into...
Introduce her to a different hunting style. Yes. You're not saying that dog hunting is wrong.
Yes.
There's just another world that you've just, from your experience, that you don't actually know about.
Yes. That's what I want to do. And also what I would like to do is to do road shows. You see, if I had enough financial muscle, I would go out and do road shows, you know, meet with these dog hunters, talk to them about hunting on private land. Because it hurts us and the industry and them in a sense that it end up becoming a racial issue, whereas it's actually a issue, the issue that's based on regulation.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would like to fight this thing. So we need to do roadshows. Go out there. I spoke to DFFE. They welcomed the idea. But that's when, just about 3 months back, when their budgets were cut and all that. And they told me, look, it's a good idea. We like it. But now our budgets were cut. So, but I would love to do it, especially KZN, Free State, Mpumalanga. I think those are the areas that have, I know Northwest as well, but these three.
Well, it sounds like, based on the interest that you say you're generating, that there could be an opportunity where, you know, you, as you said, you host this roadshow, which is like an education seminar, education symposium, in which let me introduce you to hunting. And then, hey, we've actually got some rifles here that you can shoot.
Yes.
And you can see and learn and experience it. And then afterwards you can decide, huh.
Yeah, that's...
Is this something I want to continue doing?
No, actually, that's something that I'm also doing for a living. I do beginner's workshop, introduction to hunting workshops, starting on a Friday. We do animal identification. We do... tracking, tracks and signs of animal presence. Then we do the Firearm Control Act. We try to do it in detail just so that to enable them during the application process. Then we're doing hunting ethics. It's a very debatable issue.
Sure.
So I only touch on it slightly. And then we do the Nature Conservation Act, but only on prohibited methods. And prohibited methods, hunting on private land and hunting on communal land. So I only touch these three topics. And then, and the good thing is Constant Hoogkamer came and attended one. And he gave me a good advice on how to shape it going forward. Because from him being the person that's issuing hunting permits, it was worth it.
Yeah, 100%.
So even yesterday I was talking to him. He says, no, I missed... Because he's now monitoring the progress, how I'm changing the syllabus as he recommended.
Yeah,
so which is good. I'm getting support from government as
That's
well.
Good.
I don't want to lie.
Is this been your first season as a PH? Second, how long have you been a professional hunter taking clients?
All right. I think I started in 2020 because I did my PH training in 2019, just before COVID. So when COVID hit, I think I got booked once or twice. And then 2021, the government of Northwest put me under Jacques Yenekal to mentor me now.
Nice.
Not only as a professional hunter, but also as an outfitter. So the mentorship went up to a point where I even did my dangerous game. I got my dangerous game
license. You're on an unrestricted license?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that I got it early this year in Jan.
Okay.
And yeah, now I'm a hunting outfitter and a dangerous game.
So what's your, do you have an outfitting business now?
Yes, I do.
And what's it called?
It's Melody Safaris.
Melody?
Yeah, Melody. M-E-L-O-D-I.
Oh, nice. Melody Safaris.
Yes. It's same as Melody.
Yeah, with an I.
Yeah, but this with an I. Cause
what does Melody stand for?
Same. It means the same thing. It's just it's a Tswana
word. Tswana word for what?
For melody.
You should make up something that it's like this real special name. It's like the spiritual like connection to hunting versus it's just melody.
No, melody.
In Tswana.
No. But look, you out when you're out there in the bush, you hear the sounds of birds.
Okay.
Yes, so that's where it comes from.
Okay.
And actually, the first name, I had to do a company name change.
Sure.
Because I called it Matlalera, which is African wild dog.
Oh.
And I discovered that...
There was somebody else with the name?
No. People cannot pronounce it.
Oh, that is a lot. It was quite a mouthful that you just said.
But it's African wild dog. And due to their success rate in hunting, number one. Number two, the family bond, the connection that
like
they have. So I looked at it from that angle. But for the fact that people couldn't pronounce it, and I realized I went to
Yeah, you needed a pivot straight away.
Yes.
Change right away.
Yes, and also to attract the international market. I mean, somebody will be discouraged by reading the name and they won't even read your website.
For sure, for sure. No, I like Melody. Yeah. Melody's good.
Yes.
So this year, you had a good year, 2023?
Yes, no, it was an excellent year. And, that's when, like, I got my dangerous game license.
Yeah, you got your unrestricted license.
And then I got my, I'm now an official measurer for SCI.
Okay.
So, and yeah, I hunted big game. For the first time without supervision, I went and hunted a buffalo.
Nobody died?
No, nobody died. The buffalo did, though.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so I think that's when I felt like now I've made it.
I've arrived,
yes.
Not made it, you've arrived, yeah.
Yes, I've arrived, yes. Because I was also being monitored, I mean, by the department, by Jacques. And
are you the first black professional hunter in the Northwest?
No. There has been many.
Okay.
Because remember, government used to send people on these on these courses, and but there was no.
Are you the first black professional hunter on the Exco of Custodians?
Yes,
I think so.
I am.
Yeah,
yeah. So, but and I think I'm also. It could be just that, you know, they don't. The U.S. system, I don't think they do it like we do it, where they would check their ethnic groups.
No,
but yeah. I could be the first African hunter to be on the SCI. Maybe Zimbabwe would have.
Maybe, yeah.
But in South Africa, definitely I should be the first one.
Yeah. So do you have a website?
Yes, I do have a website.
So tell everyone what your website is.
Okay, www.melodysafaris, with Melody with an I,
yep.
safaris.com.
.co.za. Oh, .co.za. Okay.
Yes.
Do you have Instagram and Facebook and all that kind of stuff set up yet?
Facebook is also Melody Safaris.
Okay.
Just look for it. And then Instagram, it's Melody_Safaris.
Okay, perfect. Yes. And if someone was going to come hunt with you, what's the thing that you love hunting the most that they should come hunt with you?
Like, okay. I would say a kudu. And
where are they going to hunt a kudu with you?
It's at Tswenyane. That's Tswenyane is between Zierust and Groot Mariko. So I have hunting rights.
And what does the landscape look like there?
It's mountainous. It's a bushveld. And kudus, they like to hide.
Mm-hmm.
But we have them in abundance.
You got good kudu there?
Excellent. I just shot a one-horned 55-inch.
Oh, could you imagine?
About a month ago.
Jeez.
Yeah, we were just looking for any animal. You know, when you're with meat hunters, they just don't care what they shoot. They want meat.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, we see this monster kudu crossing the road from right to the left. So I say to them, guys, that kudu, the way it's running, it's not going to run far. It's going to stop, camouflage, and look back at us. So be careful. And I say to the driver, say, when you get there, you just slow down. So we get there, we stop, we're looking on the left, and the driver says, check on the right. There was the 55-inch one horned.
Oh, it's a different one.
It's a different one. They were actually going to cross together, but we were too close. So I think that 55-inch one froze to just let us pass. Because, you know, they freeze.
Yeah, sure.
Camouflage. And
jeez.
Yeah, so it just froze there, but we saw it. And I said to the clients, there were two clients, each of them with a gun, but they said to me I must take up a backup gun because they didn't make their quota. So the meat they wanted, because, you know, meat hunters in most cases, I don't know if it happens, but mostly in the black communities, when you hunt, you're going to give your uncle, you're going to give your aunt.
Yeah.
Yes, so they needed enough. So they were there and I could see that, look, these guys are not going to shoot. So, but then they asked me to help them. Were they struggling? They're beginners. So then I took the shot. It went down. They were happy. Right on the spot.
Oh, so you shot it?
I shot it, yeah. Okay. For the client.
Yeah.
But they were happy.
Because that's all they want. They just want the meat.
They want the meat.
They're not there really for the hunt.
Yes.
They just want the meat.
Yes.
Okay.
So I shot it. And then it just dropped there. I was using a 357 H&H. 375. You see, I just bought a 357 revolver as recently. So now I'm doing this. I was doing a 375 H&H.
So come Hunter Kuru with McKenna.
Yes.
Melody Safaris. Yes. Melody.
Melody Safaris.
Melody Safaris.
Yes.
That's what you need to do.
That's what must happen. Yes.
Must happen.
It must happen. I need that Kuru Hunter.
Well, man, I appreciate you, McKenna. I appreciate our friendship. Look forward to the next time.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. I appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.